Good morning. Yesterday I was traveling around the city and I was appreciating one of the great activities of and joys of living in New York City is the ability to just wander the city and see everything that's going on. It's endlessly fascinating. Intriguing, disturbing. This morning I was walking over here and I could see this diffuse light just burning through the bank of clouds framed by the Puck Building facing east on Houston Street. And I could see all of these stains of old pieces of gum that had been trampled into the sidewalk, and the patterns are extraordinary if you ever pay attention. And then there was this tiny feather that was just lightly falling from the scaffolding above the entrance to our building. Yesterday I was in Sasaki Park. Do you know Sasaki Park? It's the beautiful quiet little park in the middle of Washington Square Village, just nearby here. It's actually a public space. Anyone can go over there and spend a little time. And I was walking through and there was one guy who was taking a nap on a bench in the park. Another guy who was highly concentrated, absorbed in doing his Tai Chi movements very slowly. And there was another guy who was very bedraggled and unkempt, with his belongings sort of strewn on the ground beside him. He was on his back and he was hallucinating. He was going, "No, no." All of that right there in the park. I remember hearing about, there's a kind of quirky postmodern school of urban sociology in Japan, and they'd go around and they'd look for all the really weird things about the city. They would go looking at the designs on manhole covers in the streets of Tokyo, which are actually incredible. If you look them up, you see online. And they'd see all the different layers to the city, including of history. So a staircase that would go up into a wall that had been bricked over at some later point. And a tiny, flimsily built, old-style noodle house on the corner of a block with a massive skyrise that had been built during the real estate speculation boom in Tokyo. So all of these absurd bits and flashes of beauty and expressions of pain. So walking the city and observing the city can be a kind of Zen practice, I think. Just as seeing our ordinary lives is part of our practice. Just what's happening right now in the Zendo. This morning I saw there was what I thought was a dust ball rolling right down along all of the zabutons. But it was going at a very even pace, so I looked a little closer and it was a spider, a white spider, and it was so thin it almost had no body to it. So seeing the landscapes of the city, the landscapes of our daily life, and the landscapes of our psyche also. All of the manifestations of the absurd and the beautiful and the painful in our own minds. A Zen teacher once said, "To see things clearly is to end suffering." To see things clearly is to end suffering. And I love how simple this proposition is and how radical it is. It's something that we can actually activate anytime. We can activate it in Zazen Kai, and we can activate it right now. Right this moment, if you see clearly, what do you see? So I thought I'd talk today just about this one line. To see things clearly is to end suffering. So first of all, to see, there's a koan in the Blue Cliff Record, a number 40. And in it, there's an officer named Lu Xuan who's talking with Nan Xuan, the master. And he quotes this passage. He says, "The master of the teachings, Chao, said, 'Heaven, earth, and I have the same root. Myriad things and I are one body.' This is quite marvelous." And Nan Xuan pointed to a flower in the garden. And he called to the officer and said, "People these days see this flower as a dream." So you can imagine the two of them there, perhaps going on a walk through the garden. I always thought about Lu Xuan as kind of a dilettante, someone he's read, you know, philosophy, and he's trying to show off a little bit here, citing this grandiose phrase. But going back and looking at it, it turns out that Lu Xuan was actually a serious Dharma student of Nan Xuan's. And he brought this up because he really wanted to see if his master could help him to reveal the true meaning of this Taoist and Buddhist teaching. What is the root that all things have in common? Show me the one body. So Nan Xuan does. And then he adds a comment about how rare it is to really be able to see. And it's true, if you're honest with yourself and you really look at your experience in Zazen Kai, you come to the same conclusion. It is rare to really see. And why is it rare? Because we're all so caught up in our dreams. We're like sleepwalkers. We're like people who talk in our sleep. So Nan Xuan says, and he points so that Lu Xuan and all of us will wake up from that dream. What are your dreams? Maybe you have come to Zazen Kai with profound ideas about the Dharma, like Lu Xuan. Maybe your dreams are just the chit-chat in your mind. Have you ever found yourself in having a conversation with someone when actually you were not there at all? And you were over there having a completely different conversation or living out a completely different scenario. And maybe you come back once in a while and nod your head or give a meaningful look, and you're not there at all. Has that happened to you? Or is it just me? It's pretty embarrassing if you think about it. It's incredibly rude. Or maybe there's just some really powerful feeling or conviction or prejudice that we have in a moment that prevents us from really seeing what's right in front of us. We're so consumed with our feeling or our righteous views. So, the Nanchuan is saying, wake up, look. To see things. Zen is really all about paying careful attention to things, Maybe this, sometimes I think it's an inheritance from the meticulousness of Japanese culture. So each thing is important. The kind of the tiny white flowers there on that sprig on the altar, or the spot of gum on the sidewalk, or this stick. And we pay attention to the fact that these things are myriad, they're innumerable. And even though they're innumerable, we try to pay attention to each one and appreciate each one for what it is. We don't say, don't sweat the little things, just worry about the big picture. No. We try to see the big picture in the little things. You know, we have the saying that the devil is in the details, but Buddha is also in the details. Mm-hmm. And there's also a concern for objectivity in Zen. If everything were completely subjective, we'd be in big trouble because it would all be in our minds. It would all be a dream. So we have an objective concern with things, with objects, with phenomena, forms. So we say a stork has long legs, a duck has short legs. Nose vertical, eyes horizontal. But this objectivity includes our subjective experience as well, our all the different states of mind that we go through, our emotions and fantasies and dreams. Those too are the phenomena of our lives. So it's not a denial of those things, our feelings, our moods, you know, it includes them. So I'm up this morning, maybe I'm down this afternoon, that too. But again, Buddha is in the details. So things, these things that we pay attention to are not separate from anything else. They're connected with one another. They're connected with everything. Suzuki Roshi, in his teaching on the identity of relative and absolute, the classic Zen text, said something that I thought I would share with you. He said, our effort in Zen is to observe everything as it is. Yet even though we say so, we're not necessarily observing everything as it is. We say, here is my friend, over there is the mountain, and way up there is the moon. But your friend is not only your friend. The mountain is not only the mountain, and the moon is not only the moon. If we think, I am here and the mountain is over there, that is a dualistic way of thinking, of observing things. To get to San Francisco, we have to cross over the Tassajara Mountains. That's our usual understanding. But that is not the Buddhist way of observing things. We find the mountain or the moon or our friend or San Francisco within ourselves. Right here. That is big mind within which everything exists. So to capture this reality, which is really impossible to capture in words or concepts, Suzuki coined his term, things as it is. Just this. To see things clearly. In the Heart Sutra, we read Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, doing deep prajnaparamita, clearly saw. So this is Avalokiteshvara, the avatar of compassion, who's profoundly absorbed in meditation. And she has a clear vision. She has an experience of enlightenment or illumination in which I think the important thing is clarity. So she's seeing without any filters. She's not limited by her words or ideas. She sees with her eyes open. She's not sleeping or dreaming. And I think the important thing about this clarity is that she sees with no separation between herself and things as it is. To see things clearly is to end suffering. So the sutra goes on, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, doing deep prajnaparamita, clearly saw the emptiness of the five conditions, thus relieving misfortune and pain. The five conditions, you'll remember, are form, sensation, conception, discrimination, awareness. That is, the physical nature of things, as well as the sensations that are produced in relation to those things, and the subjective consciousness that goes along with those sensations. This is a stick. A stick is used to point, or a stick is used to strike, or a stick is used to scratch. Or our awareness about, maybe I don't know what this is. So Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva sees that all of these things are ultimately empty. Ultimately empty because they are impermanent, they're constantly changing in form, arising and falling away. And because they're interdependent, they are inseparable from everything else. So they have no lasting or intrinsic nature, like you or me. Things then are ultimately empty, and emptiness is no other than things as they are, things as it is. And they can't be captured by our ideas or our speech. Thus relieving misfortune and pain. So it's saying that liberation comes from seeing this impermanence and this interdependence of all things, seeing that they have no essence. It's, in a way, it's like saying seeing through things, which we normally are convinced are so substantial and so important. Starting with ourselves, so substantial and so important. But from Avalokiteshvara's perspective, maybe the things that we get so obsessed about are not the be-all and end-all of human existence. Maybe no one else really cares about whatever it is that we think is so earth-shattering in a given moment. And so from Avalokiteshvara's perspective, if we let go of that, whatever that fixation is, we might be able to relate to what is right in front of us, that we can see right here and now in a more direct and clear way. So much, I think, of our mental life and our mental turmoil is just froth. If you do Zazen, I think that's the conclusion you come to. You can see really clearly all the froth, like Avalokiteshvara. And the Zazen Kai is a good place to see all of the froth clearly for what it is. But I don't mean to be dismissive about our subjective experience. Our feelings, our thoughts arise for a particular reason. And I think here at Village Zendo in our practice, we try to make an effort to accept our emotional pain, our mental confusion, our turmoil in our the turmoil in our hearts and in our minds. Avalokiteshvara, after all, was the one who was looking down and perceiving the suffering in the world. So Zazen Kai is a good place to see like Avalokiteshvara with the compassion of Avalokiteshvara. But though Avalokiteshvara observes and clearly sees all of that, all of these states of mind, she doesn't indulge them or attach to them. The teaching in the Heart Sutra is the teaching of wisdom that cuts through delusion because it sees that things are ultimately empty, ultimately constantly changing, inseparable from everything else. So I want to encourage you today to use the day to see with compassion, see yourselves and your world with compassion, and to see things clearly. And I'll leave you with a line which is a comment from on that same koan involving Nanchuan. It says, "Cease and desist. Then an iron tree blooms with flowers. Is there anyone? Is there?"